You just have to keep going. You have to want it enough to wake up tomorrow and do the same thing over.
This was me being a hustler.
The only way that I've gotten to this point in my life is to try to treat people the way I want to be treated.
Welcome to Ground Zero Growth with your host, Sam Sapp, owner of Lockbaud.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us today. I'm joined with my fantastic guest, Oscar Duran, with Sartorial. How are you doing today, Oscar?
Hey, not too bad. How's it going, Sam?
Did I get the last name right? Did I nail it? You're welcome to correct it for the record here.
Let's get everybody on board. I think you did fabulous. I feel fantastically grateful you tried to. My name is Oscar Duran, and I'm with Lo Bridal Sartorial. So, yeah.
That's fantastic. And you're out of Fremont, Nebraska, correct?
Oh, Fremont, Nebraska, right in the heartland, right in the middle of the U.S.
I love it. I love it. And for anybody on audio, you're kind of being robbed a little bit. Oscar has just this fantastic background, kind of this, I'm not even going to be able to begin to describe like the beautiful molding you have going on there. And then just a lovely painting and a beautiful studio. You can kind of tell you're a little bit of a, I don't even know, like a lover of the arts, but also electronica on one side. Like it seems like EDM, vintage, and artistry has just come together in a beautiful way in your office there.
I love you. I don't even think I've ever felt anybody's nailed it better. Yeah, thank you. Those are all the loves of my life and my family. I got pictures of my kids everywhere.
Right. Yes. And what I didn't even quite see, I mean, you can kind of get a glimpse of it in the video, but it was so much more profound when I was there in person. Your bookshelf in the back there is just adorned with all sorts of books. And we've even had a conversation about some of the books that you've read are just fabulous, kind of all across the board a little bit, so to speak.
Oh, thank you. No, I read a lot. I'm usually reading about four books at any time. And so,
yeah.
And so like, it's funny, I'm reading a good one right now, but like, I'm like, I asked three people, I asked Katie and two people on my team. I was like, told them a little about it. And I was like, I don't want to put it on my shelf though, because I don't know if I like where this book is going, but it's such a good book.
There are some wild books out there like that for sure. Somebody once told me, I don't know if you've ever read this one or not, just kind of like to give you an example about like, I don't know if I like where this book is going. 28 Laws of Power I think maybe one chapter before I was like, you know, this is such a good book and he has such a good premise, but I kind of feel like I need to reject the premise alone. It was basically the notion that everybody's manipulating you. Period. And the people that seem less likely to be manipulating are the ones that are most concerning. Well, the chief problem with that premise, which I don't know, to some end may be true, but the chief problem with that premise is that it rejects a world where anybody is doing anything good for anything other than selfish reasons, which again, I could be true. I just kind of don't want to face if it is. Let's put it that way.
My mom, there's this saying my mom has said since I was little. She's like, if somebody is like really thinking everybody's doing this to someone, is going to do this to them, it's because that's what they would do. So I'm like, oh man. Wow. So I was like, oh, that's the first thing that comes to their mind. I'm like, that's probably why. Cause it's like, it's possible in their reality, you know? Cause sometimes you're like, I'm like, oh man, it's kind of playing into what I was thinking about what you're saying there.
No, you're not wrong. It's a good point. Okay. Before we kind of dive too far into it, can you give kind of a high level of the different projects and kind of your different roles and businesses that you're working right now? So that way people can kind of get an idea of, and I tell folks too, don't be afraid to necessarily platform. This is your moment to let folks know that aren't anywhere near Fremont, who Oscar is and what he's working on. And then we'll kind of dive into where you came from.
Oh man, thank you. I'm going to tell you something. I'm very private, actually. Like, I'm very personable, but even people locally don't know all the little things I do. I wear a few hats. But if you talk to me long enough, I feel like I do the same thing, no matter what hat I'm doing. I'm very committed to my home, my region. It's bigger than a town. I'm very specific about that. I belong here and I'm going to give back as much as possible. And honestly, like, I love, people call it sales. I just love connecting with somebody and figuring out who they are and what's cool about them. I always say my passion is like other people's passion. So when I find somebody, if they're like into quilting, like I'm like, and they're weird into it, I'm even more into it. And I want to learn everything about them. So what that's led is like a combination of businesses or as some of my team members call expressions. I have a multitude of expressions. My core one, though, is definitely it's been the last 4.5 years. Katie, my partner and I, we have become certified master tailors and designers and doing bespoke clothing. And that's been such a evolving of a lot of things. And my interest in fashion, art, marriage, family, community, like all of that moves with everything. And so that's my main one. I think I told you this, though, but my passion and my whatever drives me as my soul is really giving back to the community a lot. And I don't mean that like pretentiously or anything. I don't even like talking about it like that per se. But I definitely feel like I understand housing and neighborhood and community work because I've lived in so many communities my whole life that's like a calling in a way. I'm very like a person of faith. Even if people aren't, I cool, but that's my driving force. So my other company is called Black Sailboat Community Development. And I do everything from renovating and building old buildings. Katie and I are restoring an old high school right now in Walnut. I have a couple clients I work with their EDs 10 hours a month, help them through their strategy, HR stuff, development, land acquisition, like whatever. I'm part of their team. And I've been with a few of those clients over 3-4 years now. And that's just cool too. So again, everything is about helping my region, helping neighborhoods feel like they're dope and people feel like they're pretty fly in what they're going to wear and see how beautiful they are.
So this will be a fun, like, small world moment. Cause you and I connected over LinkedIn, right? Just kind of an outreach and you reach back and next thing you know, we're talking. But then on that almost same sort of token, how does one get connected with, you said you're redoing a school in Walnut, Nebraska. And I just bothered to pull up a Google Maps right quick and just kind of eyeballed it. My guess is you're about 2 hours at least between Fremont and Walnut. Did I an hour, maybe two?
No, not even. It's funny. My life is in a triangle. And so I'm a weird math and I could tell you mile markers like that. Katie makes fun of me all the time because I live in a car in a lot of ways, but it's an hour. If I was going to drive to Fremont to Walnut, it's less than 1 hour, just under an hour. If I was going to drive from Fremont to Council Bluffs, which I do all the time, it's about 45 minutes. Council Bluffs to Walnut is about 45 minutes. So it's this like triangle that I feel like is my, what I call a garden region. It plugs into everything I do. And so that's my neighborhood. And so my whole approach is meeting creatives and business and people all in those circles. And I love introducing people whenever I can, you know?
That's such a big circle, a big, beautiful circle. Garden region. That's a great way of putting that.
Thank you.
You're such an interesting person in that I'm seeing this clash of math and art. I feel like you don't normally see that, really. And this kind of comes back to the EDM and the crown molding and the art. It's not often that I feel like you have this connection between, I mean, you said you like math, mile markers, but then also artwork. In the same sentence, you said garden.
Oh, it's all art.
Garden
yeah.
region. Yeah. That's fascinating. I'll ask that. What kind of had you, how did you connect the two? Like, I feel like most people are typically, I mean, I'll hark on myself a little bit. I'm not typically the artsy type per se. I mean, I love art for sure and fashion and beauty, but part of the reason I love it is because I look at it and I'm like, I can see that it's beautiful. And I could see it was well done and somebody put a lot of work into it. But if at any point somebody's like, hey, could you create anything like that? I'm over here like, I don't think so. Give me back to the ones and zeros. You know what I mean?
Man, I'm so inspired by people like that creature. I'll be honest. I don't classify myself as like an overly creative person, like talented creative like you. Like I look at your show and like the way you're outreaching and that's super creative. And I'm like, I'm kind of inspired by that. Or like my brother-in-law, Tim. He's got like a screen printing business here in town. He's like, he could come up with art just off, or my kids. Like I can look at something until something's pretty and then I can work really hard. And I don't know. For me, I guess I made the connection between my work and art. It's very clear, actually. I was about 26. There's this artist named Thurman Statham who's out of Omaha. And like, he's a big international artist, like a glass artist. And I met him through another artist friend. He's a street artist named Gerard Pafong. He's in New York now, operating there. He's from Cameroon. But I met Thurman, and Thurman was like, he's like, you know, Oscar, you're an artist. I was like, what do you mean? And he was telling me that with like the work I do with neighborhood work. And honestly, that kind of like set me in a weird, not a weird mode, but it made me really reflect a lot. Because I love when I see somebody's doing cool stuff like you or Thurman or Gerard or all these other people, I'm like really like invigorated by that. And I'm like, man, how can I grow up like these people and be cool like them? And so, I mean, I think I started thinking about it. And the first thing I did, I was like, I need an artist statement. And so it's funny, my mantra for my one company, Black Sailboat, is my artist statement since that day. And it's like, it's the guiding principle of everything I do, not just in Black Sailboat, but it's community first, people before projects, and adapt to serve. And I felt like those three things invoke me. If I'm going to look at myself as a community, a civic artist, because visually I can come up with okay stuff, but I'm not as talented as like you're talking about. That's my artist statement, I guess. And that's how I made the connection to everything else.
It's beautiful. I love that statement. Because even people before projects, you've even put a gap between that and profit. It's not people before profit. You don't even have profit in the words. People before projects.
Yeah. And that's more like, because I've been in the, I guess, the social justice sector for the last 12 years for my day job. Like we're talking about my businesses, but then my day job, my career, I always say is getting in the way, but it's, that's my calling, right? And my vocation, really. And one day I think I'll be pushed out, and my book coming out might do that. I might have set some folks, but that's okay. And then I told Kate, I was like, you know what? I'll just design clothing full time, but I'll feel okay about it because the whole idea is simple. It's just that we got to focus in our garden regions, be more creative, be more optimistic, and vibe very creatively with each other. Just like you reaching out, I'm inspired by that. That's door knocking. That speaks to me. That's what we need more of. I mean, you're in actually what sociologists and economists call a mega region already, where you live right now. And so I'm building on that theory with this.
Well, I think to some end, how do I say this? I think to some end, the more successful you are, the more people you do offend to some degree. I just don't know if there's a way around it. You can't be it's a bit of an opinion, but I don't think you can be genuine about who you are without offending people, which is where it's kind of, anyway, we'll get off on a different topic. Let's kind of get back to, so our regular program here. So Oscar, this is where we are right now.
Yeah.
Let's kind of grab the proverbial, you know, time machine dial.
Okay.
And we're going to hit rewind, right? And we're going to go back to your high school days. This is kind of my favorite period to jump to. So we're pulling Oscar up here. We're turning the dial back. Oscar's been plopped into his young high school, 16, 17, 18-year-old self, right? And the reason I like this period is because I feel like this is where kind of turmoil is at its sort of peak. Maybe we're finally getting out of sort of the puberty period by far, but then it's also like we're in high school. We kind of think how things are working, but also you need a career, you need a job. What are you going to be doing?
Yeah.
So what is Oscar in the middle of right now? And what is it you think you're going to be when you grow up?
I'll be honest. We met a couple weeks ago, like in person. I'm not even just exaggerating this time. You made a comment to me that really floored me and made me process a lot of things differently. And so where I'm at right now, I feel very grateful because I'm at a most peaceful state I've probably been at in 5 years, not only professionally, but business-wise. I see a lot of clarity to a lot of these ideas that I've been trying to evolve over the years. And so my big focus right now is going to be one, coming out of my shell and not being so shy, because as a friend told me, my trauma might be getting in the way of letting me be who I'm supposed to be. And so I think that's what I'm trying to do. Katie was talking to me about wanting to do a podcast, in which I've told her she's this beautiful soul that everybody loves her. She's super cool. And I was like, yeah, let's get you on there. And, you know, and I'm like, you know, all the community work, I just want to push it. And so I have this book that I've had almost written for a while, these papers. And so I just really grown up. I built the website since we talked, put a date on it, been telling people about it. So the big thing is the book coming out. And then at the same time, not being scared to talk about that. You know, as I do this community work, it's funny because I'm not, even though I've read all these books and I've gotten the degrees that have taken me, you know, 10 and a half years to get my master's degrees and 7 years to get my undergrad. It's not the conventional way, right? But I don't really belong in policy writing. I'm broken like the rest of the world, right? I'm just a Latino guy that likes clothes and lives in rough neighborhoods. But the reality is that I believe that everybody can belong in that kind of work. And so a lot of what I do is like, I'm just, in my mind, I'm just a guy who, a tailor and clothing designer that can put that creativity into the community work. And I think a lot of us can. And so that's kind of where it's all coming together right now because of friends like you.
I love it. And I can already tell I'm going to be crying a decent bit through this episode. So,
oh, please, man. I love
it. Be wary, everyone.
No, so, I'm a big softy. I'm going to try not to. I'll be embarrassed. My mom says there's this old.
Well, I already started. There's tears. So, you know, I mean, I broke the dam for you.
I thought you were going to make me talk about high school. I was like, shoot, I was already tearing up. I was like, I'm not going to do it. No, I just.
And that's where I'm trying to decide. And I feel like I do need to ask you directly, and I'm more than willing to. Do we need to skip past that? Because what I love, you are, for starters, you are a beautiful soul, Oscar, as well. I can kind of already tell. And so, and you're talking about, you know, you're in this kind of metamorphosis, sort of beautiful transition as well. And so, I know we didn't necessarily talk in avid detail on how the programming was going to be. So if you're not interested quite in going back to the high school period, we could skip along a little bit.
We'll see what happens. I mean, I don't mind at all. I mean, if you're asking me clearly, yeah. I mean, you do you. We'll get it out. Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, I guess, I mean, that's, where are you? You know, where are you in the world? And what are you planning on doing right around that period?
Honestly, I am right now or back then? What do you ask?
Back then.
Oh, high school was, I had a very unconventional life, which I've grown to learn, as I've grown up. My mother, incredible mother, you know, incredible. Like, I always like to say this to frame my mom. My first book was How to Win Friends and Influence People. And we, every day we had to read 5 pages. And that's just something me and my mom did since first grade. And read it over. And I think we spent like 2 years with that book. And then the next one was The Road Less Traveled. And that was the next book I spent about a year with her on. And it's just like, you know, any free time, she just wanted me to ride these things. And, you know, I'm very grateful because then my mom was very like, she was a single mom until we got married. So it made for some flavor, you know, some flavor. And so let's just say by the time high school came, and I love my mom and my stepdad, who's my dad, my real dad, really. And by the end of my sophomore year, I was living on my own, you know, maybe we'll just say creative differences, and it was better for everybody. I didn't want to make any more issues for anyone. And it wasn't what some would think of like, oh, this guy's just being maybe a bad kid or anything. I think a lot of people looked at me that way. An at-risk youth kid. I think that's where I started having all that fed to me locally. I was a Latino kid in the Midwest who was not living at home. And you're like, oh, let's. I remember my health school sent me a Marine recruiter and I was like, oh, you know, I worked it good though. The Marine recruiter read after, called my mom and them. He's like, this kid's going places. He's not going to, I was like, damn. She's like, what'd you tell him? I was like, I don't know. It's just me and me. I don't know. I still haven't done anything. I don't know.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Well, to your end, it's interesting because those labels are like a perfect example, right? At risk, you know, and you're making these descriptions. Somebody the other day, we were talking and they used the term when I was rebellious a lot. And it was interesting to me because it was kind of like, well, what's rebellious? And I was like, well, I was shoplifting and I was this, that, and the other. And I'm like, but is that rebellion? What is that? Who are you rebelling against? Right? It just, that terminology used, rebellion, it's like it leads to, okay, well, who's told you, I mean, I guess obviously shoplifting is wrong, but who's told you that, like, why are you in this world where you feel like that's what you need to do? And why are you in this world that, and how do you feel that way? Who has you feeling that way? So anyway, okay. So you said creative differences.
Out
your sophomore year. That's,
and then my
now
sophomore
I was
year.
Homeschooled. That's
summer,
what, 17?
Summer between, yes. 16? In between 16? Sophomore and junior year, yeah. I rocked it. I took out.
And where are you geographically?
Close. I'm in Bellevue at that time. Bellevue, Nebraska, just south of Omaha.
Okay. No,
it's
fine.
Got into school. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Just rocked it.
So you got into school. And that, so 15, 16, you got into school. I tested into school right around 15, 16. The one I went to had a maybe 17. One I went to had this placement test, and as long as you pass, it was community school. As long as you pass the placement test, I don't think it mattered how old you were. They'd put you in. A buddy of mine tested in a calculus. I tested in like barely algebra 101, I think. But anyway,
oh man.
So you got into school. You're in Bellevue, Nebraska. What school are you going to?
I went to two schools in high school. So I went to one school. I went to Creighton Prep. It's a private Jesuit school. My mom really. I came from a different kind of environment before, so she really wanted something good for me. She's always wanted good things. Her and my dad, and so they made that investment for me because like they found my yearbook, and I kind of had a wild little fun eighth grade year, you know. So like I remember my options from my parents being like, "You're gonna go to Mount Michael or Prep," and I was like, "They're both all boys schools." And I was like, all right, I can live at an all-boys school or I can go to one. I was like, oh, I'm going to go to one. So I went to Prep. And I'll be honest, Sam, I had a chip on my shoulder the whole time I was there. Because I'm not from affluence at all. Like I had to do work study there. I had to like clean toilets, literally. I had to like mop floors. I had to sweep to pay it. And then I had to work and pay tuition too to help my parents pay for it because it was expensive. And I think a lot of that carried weight because a lot of the kids weren't like that. I remember, like, I started a little construction company my sophomore year. I started renovating basements for, like, you know, some teachers. I did a job for a teacher. And then, like, I started door knocking and getting other little window jobs and stuff my sophomore year. It was, like, my last year at Prep. And I remember I'd have stuff like windows and things in my back. And some of the kids would make fun. You know, they didn't understand. They're like, oh, you got trash in your truck. I'm like, oh, they don't get it. I'm just working, man. I got to go to work after this, you know? But it's funny, you don't know anything at that age. But what I will say though, man, so like when I decided to have creative differences and Prep find out, I was, excused, politely, for like, you know, morality reasons. It's not something they stood with their code. So I got into another high school, for a moment. That didn't go well, so I, you know, within about 3 months of me being at the other high school, I found out, we don't need to get in that story. It's nothing I did badly. It's just bad circumstances. And I love the people who are involved that made things happen. But, I was like, okay, I can't go to school here. I can't go to Prep. And I was like, man, I can't not graduate. I can't be one of those numbers, you know? So like, I went back to Prep and I just, honestly, I door knocked. I did my thing. I talked to him. And they'd already put a lot of work into me, in a different way. And they have this motto there because it's the Jesuits. They're one of the orders of priests that takes a vow of poverty, which I think is beautiful. They're one of the few. And they're really valued towards education. And so their motto there is a man for others. And I'll be damned if I didn't graduate and feel that way because I graduated. They didn't pry too hard, but we made a plan. I pitched an idea. And it worked. The only bad ask, I tell you, Sam, I say it all the time. My favorite saying is the only bad ask is no ask. And good communication is important. And you know what? They let me finish. I graduated from there and I'm like so grateful to them. You know, it's made a lot of learning who Ignatius was. And I think I like the counselor there and some of the professors. Great school. Can't rave enough about it.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. Fantastic. Okay, so you're excused from the school and you have a few days at least. I don't know how long is that period.
A few months, you know.
But it's enough to scare you straight, right? It's enough to be like
I'll be honest. I was enjoying it. I was at the other school. I got ladies around me. It's kind of going nice.
Okay.
You know, some is just
what scared you straight? Because it sounds like you had a moment of scared straight, so to speak.
I got excused from that school as well. I was kind of out of moves. I was out of moves.
Gotcha.
Cat was out of the bag that I wasn't like legally on my own. Long story short.
Yeah.
And so I was really jammed up with options here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you went back to the one that would.
And
that
it's
would
not. This isn't a. I don't want anything to be looked about like my upbringing because like my parents actually live far away. They didn't even live in Omaha. They're like, we're an hour and almost an hour and a half from Omaha. So there was a lot of barriers that made it difficult to make this work, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just kind of rolling with it.
No, I get it. But I mean, rolling with it. So it's cool. You went back and they brought you back in. So And this is, okay, so you graduate high school, if I'm following you correctly.
Did it.
And so
go
then.
Right to college. I got a full ride. Dang, that was
wow.
crazy.
Wow.
No, it was the last.
Tell me about the full ride.
Oh, man. And I messed it up. It was like
language. This is an explicit podcast. It's perfect.
It was the last week of school. I get a knock on the door. Father Tillman, he comes, calls me out of class. He's like, Oscar, what's up? And he's like, so I haven't picked a college yet. I'm like, yeah, I can't afford school, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to still be paying y'all. I told him, I said, when I'm done here. And he's like, well, if we get you a full ride. And he's like, this is a hallway conversation too. He's like excited. And he's like one of the people that I just like remember, like just being this beautiful soul. That one of the main reasons I like fell in love with prep, Father Tillman. And he was like, long story short, got a full ride. I just had to wrestle with the team a little bit and not mess up my grades, you know, and I had a full ride, books and tuition at UNO. So that was cool. And so I was going to get to go to college, you know?
So I feel like we need to take a pause for a second because I'm seeing a bit of a theme here, and I would love to understand it more.
Yeah,
you're kind of skimming over some things, and I'm not saying we need to go into detail there, but I would like to understand. It's clear to me that other people saw things in you, like even the Marine recruiter, right? And your mom, like, what did you say to him, right? Like, it's clear to me that you have this way even then of carrying yourself in a way that has other people like, this kid needs invested in. He's had a rough go of it, but there's potential there. What is the potential they're seeing? How are they seeing it, right? Because not everybody, I don't feel like everybody gets that. You know, there's probably plenty of people out there. I mean, there's scenarios where people see potential, but there's also scenarios where it's like, kid's never going to turn around.
Mm. You know what I think it was? I always think about what my privilege was, because I think we all have privilege. You know, I know people don't like that word. Everybody has privilege. Everybody. And it's hard to understand that. And my privilege, which I always think of like as hardest things I had, is my mother. I know I have unconditional love from her. Unconditional. Even if she says it, I know it. She can't even fake it. And two is my mom told me I could do anything. I mean, I remember her before even that book. I remember Kinder and my words is like, if you're going to sweep floors, you better be the best damn floor sweeper. If you're going to flip burgers, you be the best at it, you know, and you could do it. I said, like, I was raised. I use this when I joke, and my mom obviously did do. I was like, yeah, typical Mexican mom. She was carrying me till I was 10, you know, like wouldn't put me down. And in those ways, my mother, like, and then we had challenges, but like, man, my mom, I had somebody that believed in me from the get-go. So I think it simplified life for me because the only two things we really need in this world, really, is unconditional love and somebody to believe in you. And I think those are the two things you can start from. You know what I mean? And so like, and then from there, you know, my dad, he's my dad. And we had our differences too, but man, he's a hard worker. And he had a rough life. He had a rough life too. And I always think of like, man, how did he turn out to be such a dope human with the life he had, you know, regardless of the differences we had, you know? And so I think like, but exceptional. I mean, honestly, they call it the German and Protestant work ethic. Now he was a German Catholic, but insane worker. And so is my mom. You know, she comes from an immigrant family. That's what brought our family to the, I'm giving a talk tonight on what brought my family to the Midwest. And it was the sugar beet, you know, we're migrants here. And so it's that work ethic is important. But I also think like the big thing is I think, you ever feel like you're prepared, being prepared for something? I don't know.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Even just this last month. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, even you meeting me has felt not coincidental.
It's a mindset shift you have to make, though, I think. Like, even the book that I wrote, Standing on Shoulders, I don't know where you're at in it, but, and I don't.
Two chapters in. Great.
It's okay. And I don't think I even mentioned it in that book, but I remember somebody the other day they said something and they were like, yeah, I don't know how, am I full of myself? And I said, well, if that's true, then I am too, because I had the same thought. And the thought was, in the worst of it, I had this moment of like, this is going to be a great story on stage in front of a crowd of people. And it's like, I mean, it is kind of funny because it is like how full, but that was what was going through my head, right? Mm-hmm. Like even in the worst of it, it was like, there's something about this that serves something bigger than what I can even see right now.
Yeah. And it's hard to like articulate it. And so like with me and my life, I feel like all the way, I mean, until I got to Omaha or until I went to prep, I went to at least one different school every grade, at least one different one. Sometimes it was two. And that was just a lot of moving. And so it kind of made this environment where I remember once we lived in, when we lived in Memphis, I remember this kid coming up to me. And Katie gets sad about it. I don't think it's sad, but I think it kind of frames how I think of things too. This kid's like, oh, because we were vibing. It was towards the end of the school year. And I knew it was about time. My mom hadn't told me yet, but I was like, oh, it's about time. And he's like, oh, we're going to be friends forever, right? But so I was like, oh, no, man. I'm probably going to dip in a minute. I didn't say it like that, but I was like, I was very controlled to be like, no, I'm probably going to leave soon. But I'll remember you forever. You know, I don't remember his name, but I remember him and his family and the impression and the love I had then. You know what I mean? And I think that's part of it. And so I got to go up in all these Black neighborhoods, Asian neighborhoods, gay neighborhoods. I mean, everything. I mean, like, and I don't mean to call them. If you don't like the, people are offended by the boxes. I don't mean to. It's just, that's how neighborhoods identified and what they were full. And so I was made to kind of be in all these different groups of people. And that's why I love everybody. I make a big part of my life is not to judge anyone. I feel like I can learn anything from anybody. The person who doesn't have housing, I have a lot to learn from them. You know, if I could steal an hour of their time, I would be so grateful.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So you graduate high school, you get a full ride to college because they, you know, they see the potential. What are you going to college for?
Oh, general, undecided, undeclared, typical Midwest Latino kid of my age. I mean, I think it's funny. I've always done this social ethnography and that's, I was undeclared. So I ended up getting I've always loved history. And so I would graduate. It took a while.
I don't even think I know. This guys sound. So you go to college. You can undeclare, and you just graduate with a general.
You take your gen eds for the first year. You know, you got to take, you know, college algebra 13-20. I had to take that four times actually to pass. The regular English literature. You got to take a psych or a social class, and I didn't even know what sociology was. I took psychology. I would learn later. Ironically, I'm a sociologist now.
Wow. Okay. So what's your first full-time gig?
Oh man. First of all, I got to say, I messed up my scholarship and I lost it right away. So, I think that's important. Lost the scholarship right away. Lost it right out of the gate. Lost it within the first year. I even got a letter. It's like, hey dog, it was pretty much like, hey, okay, we get it. You're going to need to take a year off and rethink what you want to do with your life. We're not going to let you into school. That's kind of what happened. And so I like took off to Texas.
How do you lose the scholarship?
You have a construction company and you do roofs and you have three staffers and I'm not making it crying in the night. It rains and you're in an algebra class and you're like, I got to get out there and cover that roof. And you leave. And that happens a bunch. And you're too young to really know about communication with teachers. They think different things, and I get it. Saying, you know, and so it gets to be too much because, you know, trying to pay your rent. At that time, I'm trying to pay like an ex-fiance's bills. Also, I messed some stuff up there. I'm like trying to save my credit. I'm trying to like, you know, pay this tuition thing. Like, and then I'm like, oh man, so it's a grind, you know, trying to do it all. It's not easy, as they say it is for sure, right?
No. No, especially not with all that. That's a lot all at once and competing agendas. Interesting. Okay, so you lose your scholarship. Let's kind of zoom in on that first happening. What are you doing? you know, you lose your scholarship, but you're going to keep going to school. What's your decision there?
You know, there's something about me. I don't like anybody telling me something I can't do. Similar to like when you told me my trauma was in the way, I was like, trauma's in my way. That, no way. No way. Nothing's going to control me that way. That's really what it was. Nothing. And so when I did that, I dipped. I was like, all right, I can't go to school in this state. I'm out. They don't know that this letter exists in Texas. I'm going to go back to Texas. So I went back to Texas for a minute. Didn't do good that semester either. Same thing. I went down there. I bought like a big pressure washing machine. I was trying to pay some bills. I was more focused on that in school. Still trying to do the thing. And like, I was like, oh, man, it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. Then I came back. Luckily, my year was off from Nebraska. And I went back in. I'm like, all right, I gotta push this through, man. I didn't really have a lot of people in my life that I could emulate in terms of like financial success. I just knew that like a lot of the people that I grew up with hadn't done great. Some had already died by that point. Some had been in prison. Some, I don't know where they went. Family, friends, right? So it's just not, there's this economist, Ross Shetty, amazing. He has this moving to opportunities model, and he talks about how important it is and how defining, and statistically, you can't even refute it. The zip code you're born into really reflects mm-hmm. your outcomes or you're raised in. He says raised in. I say born into even. I think it's even harder to shake it that you were born into it and how long you lived there initially. But I think that's important, right? And because I think that's what I gravitated towards when I learned what sociology was and studying social inequality. I'm not trying to sound like a Marxist or anything, because I'm also a capitalist, right? I love businesses. I love entrepreneurship, but I love humans. And I also believe in social entrepreneurship.
Well, but okay. And I don't even know how much you dove into that necessarily either, but I'll just to kind of blow the roof off, so to speak, I'll go as far as to say, you know, Marxist, Karl Marx, his sort of manifesto is a very interesting piece of philosophy and psychology, right? And it's, you know, it's the argument made is that it's never really truly come to pass. Now, to your point about capitalism, I make the argument that I don't think it can, right? I think it's kind of this idealistic world maybe that just can't exist on planet Earth, so to speak.
No, yeah.
But no, that's all to say a lot of people damn the manifesto because the damage is done, and I think rightfully so. But if you read it just with the understanding that it's an interesting work, I think, you know, I don't know.
Oh,
something
yeah,
I got
copies of that. I got, you know, Sam Smith back there too. And then Das Kapital, you know, a lot of folks, I've taught some classes and I love telling them, you know, Marx and Weber were 20 and 21 when they wrote Das Kapital. And both from affluent families, and they rebelled. They rebelled against their wealth, and they're like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. The world is like this, and we're going to do it this. You know what I mean? So it's like, and there were these young people, I mean, for their time. So I was like telling, I was like, don't let us think that our ideas are too big to change the world, right? You know, and then a lot of thing too is that they wrote about the evolution of economies. It wasn't even so much about just communism, right? It's like, things are going to move, you know? Joel Kotkin really wrote a great book. It was The Coming of New Feudalism, right? It was like 3 or 4 years ago. And it's funny because just with the announcement of the new 50-year mortgage, I'm like, oh, shoot, here comes indentured servitude again. And I'm like,
wow.
It's kind of funny. You know what I mean? So like everybody's kind of talking about it. It's like, oh, yeah, we're moving because capitalism, unfortunately, it's a and I'm going to play the game, and I don't want to sound crazy, right? But it's haves and have-nots, and it's – that's just how it works.
Well, it's yeah. I mean, there's. Did we talk about? Have you read Atlas Shrugged?
And I don't mean that in a good way. Yeah, yeah. No, I haven't. No, you didn't.
No, I don't mean it in a good way. I mean, yeah. Ayn Rand came out of the USSR, and she blueprints through a beautifully fictional, like it. I mean, it's a the fictional like romance, historical fiction kind of a thing, and it's. I mean, if you can get through the fact that it's like three lengthy books. You know, basically like a Lord of the Rings trilogy kind of a thing. But if you can get through it, it's a beautiful book, and it blueprints basically the fall of capitalism into communism just through natural decay. And I don't know. It's one of those things where she wrote it forever ago, right? I think it unfortunately, and I really hope not. I mean, to everybody listening, I truly, truly, truly hope not. But I think the book kind of nailed the progression. The only thing we don't know is when.
Yeah. You know, and that, I think that's where, I won't name this person, one of my favorite, I love stories. I remember being at a construction meeting before. So when I first started doing like neighborhood, like CHODO work, they call it, community housing and development organization work, there were no groups working in South Omaha yet and like 8 working in North Omaha and lots of opportunities in Eastern Omaha at this time. This is 15 years ago. But the problem in South Omaha is that the lots were so small, hard to build on, hard to acquire, and really difficult for a construction company. And I come from a construction background. Ironically, though, when I got into Habitat work, I didn't do any construction. So there was always this kind of funny thing is like, and I may be more subconscious. I'm like, man, I think they just see me as an office guy and I can swing a hammer just as good. But it didn't matter. I wasn't there to swing a hammer because I'm a slow construction guy. Oh, man. I don't know. Yeah.
You're good. And I almost feel like I need to addendum my own statement. When I say when, I think we need to fight like hell to prevent it from happening anytime soon. And I think,
oh, yeah,
perfect world, we can kind of turn back the clock to delay the outcome. I mean, perfect world, we delay the outcome indefinitely, kind of, you know, but, and that's the trick, right? And that would be the, if that statement does one thing, I hope it lights a fire in someone's ass, because the reality is this economy that we have, beautiful, flawed or otherwise, needs to be fought for. By this generation, the next, and the one after it. And if you don't fight for it, that's Atlas Shrugged's blueprint. That's the natural decay of apathy. That's the I've surrendered freedom for security. I can't even think, unfortunately, which president said that off the top of my head. But all right. So back to, okay, you come back to Nebraska after the year. Things don't go well in Texas. You're back now. You plug back in and you do graduate. I'm going to be honest, Oscar. I'm over here on pins and needles. I thought you graduated, but then I'm also like, does he graduate? We're smack in the middle of it and I don't know anymore.
Oh, man. I come back from Texas. Realize I'm an Omaha guy now. And I'm like, you know, this is it. And so I did a couple more classes and I was like, I have to retake all my first semester, my 2 years of college. That's why it takes me 6 years. If you retake all your classes again, the grade trumps the bad ones. So I just had to go through it, pay for it all myself. And the whole time I did it, it was a great lesson and the importance of not taking on too much, being strategic, having a plan before you jump into something. I mean, I was like, I think about it because, I mean, I literally just paid off my student loans 2 months ago. And it was tough, you know? It was tough. But we got there. And so
that answers that question.
Yeah.
Because I was over here like, how is this guy not, and what happened? You know, it's that's a lot of college elongated. So, okay. So you retake, you decide you're an Omaha person, which that's pretty fantastic. I'm
committing to my region.
Yes. Yes. Okay. What job are you working? Because the roofing thing, that seemed it was difficult for you to juggle both of those.
Yeah.
What job are you doing that helps you pay through, or are you just like, how are you getting through?
My day job? What I do when I'm not fighting crime? I run a housing.
When you're in college, the second time or third time in Omaha.
You said
I just had to pay for it.
I go back.
I don't have my full ride scholarship anymore.
Well, damn, Sam, I still got a bunch of construction tools and that's all I know how to do. So I started doing construction again. I just went into it and like a little more discipline and be like, I got to do it. But I will say this, by the time I got to the end of my undergrad and it was taking so long and I started thinking about how much the interest was costing. Nobody told me this. I was like, I wonder how much this interest. And I started looking into it. And I was like, oh, holy buckets. I got to get out of here or I'm never going to get out of this hole now. And I got to like finish with something. Because I could tell you a lot of people in my cohort of graduating didn't get a degree. And they owe just as much as money as I got. And that's what's concerning too in a lot of ways. I think that's a big challenge of our overall higher education system. You know, it's just, there's not a lot of accountability. Where's the ROI on whatever degree you're going to get, you know?
And it is so easy to like, you know, you just, we'll get you a loan, no problem, right?
Oh, yeah, it's
not like, and you're young and impressionable, right?
No.
I mean,
and it's
expensive.
My first, and then the amount of money that college went up in the 6 years of my undergrad was astounding. Astounding. I mean, it went from like, I don't even, I'd be making up numbers if I give them, but it's as dramatic as $500 a credit hour to like 5,000. It's as dramatic as that by the end. And so you just see all that change. Now, a lot of great things, investment. I love UNO. And I took a long time because I just had a different set of circumstances. And it was just about getting it done. And luckily, though, I pursued degrees that I knew would help me. Maybe not to some. History, Latin American studies, French, you know, which was part of the original plan.
Okay, so another question. Is it safe to assume maybe you have a little bit of ADHD in there? And I'm seeing you, like, rewind a little bit. I'm seeing you pulled multiple directions. You mentioned pay off some ex-fiancé loans, roofing job. Obviously,
yeah.
You got to go to school. You show up in class. Now it's raining. We got to do the roof.
Keep it
you know
going.
What I mean? Like, I mean, it's a mix of pulling you multiple directions,
yeah.
But it's also maybe a little bit of ADHD. There's a squirrel.
You know what? I wonder that because I do know I have been told I have ADHD and want to be, but I think everybody I meet says gets told and tells me that. And so I'm always kind of taking it with a grain of salt and not downplaying it all. It is real for sure, right? But like for me, I'm more like, honestly, life has just always been a bunch of fires, little fires. And I don't have time to sit there and move on things. I got to knock it out and I got to keep going because nobody's going to give me anything. I'm not inheriting a bunch of land or how, like, so it's always this, there's always been that thing of like, my mom has always been in the back of my mind of being like, because on top of reading those books, she was always talking to me about legacy and family. And, you know, we're from Texas and we talked about the Bush family and, you know, how it takes a family to get to something like that. And it takes a lot of strategy across multiple generations. And those things were ingrained in me to this day, you know, so.
Well, so I ask, it's not. I'm actually trying to help somebody out there that might be kind of similar to this. So,
okay.
But I'm seeing a world where you're pulled multiple directions, right? And
mm-hmm.
And at first you kind of allow that to happen. Is that fair to say? Between the Omaha the first time around, ONU the first time around, and then down in Texas, but then back in Omaha, you kind of have this sort of like, I need back into construction, right? Because that's what I know how to do. And I have all these tools, but I'm also going to achieve the degree and I'm going to figure out a way to juggle these balls in a way that nothing falls to the ground without my conscious allowance of that to happen.
Preach. Amen. That's exactly it.
So here's the question that I'm getting to, right? Okay, so I nailed it. That's good. Here's the question. And I don't know the answer to this, frankly.
I might not either.
Let's talk to the younger version of yourself that is juggling all the balls, but is allowing some to fall by happenstance. What would we tell that, Oscar, to hopefully get them to real, like, hey, man, I mean, you're going to lose your scholarship. You're going to lose because you're not juggling the balls effectively.
I don't think there's anything I could have told him. I would have told him I love him and I'm here for him if he messes up. That's what I would tell him. And I'll tell you that because I know, I don't think there's anything you can stop it. There's also the other things of like my mom's furnace going out and I had to use one of my student loan payments for college that semester to pay for her furnace to get back on. You know, there's also little things like that. There's also like cars getting impounded. There's also your sister, you know, getting... her doesn't have a car and needs one, like, and you got to step. I mean, there's these all these other things, and it's like, it's so, when you come from family, I mean, that's what family is, and I don't even think it's an income thing, right? Like, it's just, we overlook it. And so what I would tell young Oscar, because I know back then, and even still, I feel alone a lot of times. I think that's what I wanted to hear is this, hey, man, you're going to be all right. Because I remember being terrified all the time. Nobody ever thinks I'm terrified. I'm a big chicken. I'm a big scaredy cat, you know? I'm scared nobody's going to like me. I'm scared I'm going to upset people. I'm scared I'm going to offend somebody. I'm scared I'm going to hurt somebody's feelings. And that genuinely would bother me. I don't, and I hurt a lot of people's feelings because I'm trying to push policy and rules, and I don't mean to. And it always breaks my heart when I do. And I mean that. But that's what I do, I guess. You know?
I'm sorry. Normally I have another question lined up, but there's just, I'm mentally kind of sitting with that for a second because there's a lot there. And I see myself in a lot of that to some degree too. I recognize what you're saying. What's kind of interesting too, though, I get it. Let's put it that way. Because you don't want to hurt anybody. I mean, but it's also so difficult, right? Because with every decision made, especially at a certain level, especially no doubt in policies and politics, like what you're talking about, right? Every decision, unfortunately, does seem to have a group of people that it does hurt. There's a group of people that it helps, but there's a group of people that it hurt. Well, even in business, it's kind of wild. And I've just kind of had to come to terms with it. Let's use an example in business, right? Every client that I'm so fortunate as to win over is a client that either somebody else cannot get or is a client that came from somebody else, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the natural answer is it's like, well, the other person should have been, you know, doing a better job, right? And that's fair. And you can say that. But when I first started business, it was really upsetting to me because it's like, okay, I'm a solopreneur going out trying to make it work. But also maybe there's another solopreneur out there that's also trying to make it work that's under an overpass. Mm-hmm. And maybe they'd be just as good, if not better, at this client. But also, I don't know that person, and it's not like I can manipulate the client's decision to pick them over me anyway. But somehow that still kind of racks your brain, right? It's like,
yeah.
And then money that you earn from the client, right? That's money that they now do not have. That's money that they can't hire someone over, or money that they can't increase the size of their house to better their family, or, you know, whatever it is, right? And so, but you can kind of drive yourself mad thinking that way if you're not careful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Hardest critic. I'm my hardest critic all the time. So, but I think we all are, right? I think, hopefully. Actually, I hope we all are hardest critics. I think that's okay. I think that's a good thing, maybe.
Maybe a little bit. Lately, as things have become harder for me in my business, I've become more loving of myself. My internal voice used to be very damning, very damning. And lately, it's been more fatherly. And that's so not to give it an excuse, right? If you mess up something, but the difference, I think, is the damning voice will not let you sleep if it can get away with it. The fatherly voice is the one that's like, it's okay. You'll do better next time, right? All right. That's
you notice in the New Testament, not getting overly religious, this just applies, you know.
No, let's do it.
Jesus, when he calls out for his father, he calls him Abba. And Abba, I heard a priest tell me this once, it actually translates to like daddy, like a solemn, it's not like father, it's a more like toned down, like, you know? And yeah. I think that's so like, it's so crazy because I remember that, like that landed with me when I heard that the first time. It's just with me to this day. So when you're talking about that, made me think of that, you know, like the importance of like just having that. Even the people who are invoked and wrote the Bible with the Holy Spirit, like knowing to, that's part of the story that makes it even more connecting and, you know, yeah.
So what are you doing after you graduate?
After I graduate, man, so undergrad or grad school? Then I went and signed up for more.
I'm kind of lost here. I'm trying to get through to the career portion of things. You're in construction while you're going to school. Assume we're past school.
This is important. Last year of undergrad, because a lot of things start coming together. I come back. I'm like, I'm in my region. All right. I'm here. What am I going to do now? I'm going to finish this school. I'm going to figure out how I grow up, and I'm going to stick here because my grandfather said, you got to root yourself somewhere. Because every time you move, you start over. And I remember thinking about how much I've moved. And I'm like, damn, I can't start over anymore. I got a root. And so that's what I did. And so it took me a while to get through it, but I still kept doing construction. Honestly, I just love working with my hands. And I always kind of envied. I remember going to prep and hearing about kids that were like going backpacking or going skiing and stuff on trips. And I thought that was cool. And so like, and then even in college, like freshman year, sophomore year, people were like going on these cool trips. And like, oh man, this is a different world, you know? I was like, man, so it was my last semester. And I'm like, I saw this thing with the Office of Latino Latin American Studies. And I remember I was getting an undergrad in Latin American Studies. So this thing called OYAS. And it's like a service learning trip. And it's like to Peru. And I'm like, oh, this is dope. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna get out of here. And I had also done this urban sociology class at the same time. So it was like my last, I really didn't need a lot of classes. I just took some random ones. They didn't count. And these two things changed so much fundamentally for me too, because I had this awesome metamorphosis through serving. And it's not about this, but I want to fast forward it because basically in my time in Peru, I'm hanging out in this market that's like, it's just like the third largest textile district in Southern Hemisphere. And it's in this district. And so I started to be like, oh, I'm going to bring back some clothes. And I did that a little bit, started slanging some stuff at school on the side, you know, trying to do like not do construction. Cause it was like really, I knew I couldn't do construction and the school at the same time. So I needed other stuff. So I was like, I'm going to get more into this clothing. And I was like, oh, I wonder if I should do like a job maybe in clothing while I'm trying to do this. So I remember I was like, where could I do this? And I decided to go sell shoes at Yonkers in Omaha. It's like, but I wanted to sell salon shoes. I was real nerdy about it. I was like, no, I want to only sell your expensive stuff. And I did really good at that. And then by the time you knew it though, as I was like trying to figure out how I was going to get back to the place I live and how I was going to root myself here, I found this field of study that was like neighborhood people and neighborhood revitalization. And I remember that census tract, this urban study class I took. I picked census tract 24, and it's in this neighborhood called Deer Park. Nobody would have called it Deer Park at the time either. And I walked in. I remember looking up this little bit about it, and I found this neighborhood. This is before internet was real big either, too. It's also important to classify. It was a lot harder to research. You had to go to the library or, like, you know, spend some time and have a license to do EBSCOhost or something back then. So I remember just being like, well, I'm going to go meet these people. And I mean, I think, again, remember I said, you ever feel like you're trained something to do? And I met these people who were just this little neighborhood group, right? You had the longest serving city councilman in Omaha history to this day. You had a senator for that district. You had a former senator for that district. You had the head of fundraising for Catholic Charities for Omaha there. And you had these like other, this old school vibe. South Omaha used to be called the Magic City. You know, it's built off like this, you know, there's a blue collar working community and it has that ethos. You know, and it had this culture of Irish and Italians and Latinos. And so it has this blood in it, right? That's this work. And honestly, these people were cool. All Anglo, not Latino, but they were all in their optimistically late 40s and up. And I'm like 22, two eyebrow rings, you know, pink metallic hair. I'm DJing on the side. You know, I make good money doing that. And I'm always trying to think of stuff to do. And so I end up falling in love and I learn all this cool stuff they're doing. I mean, they were parking cars at College World Series, right? As like a fundraiser. And we were raising like close to half a million, $500,000 a year as a fundraiser. I was like, that's cool. I didn't know you could do stuff like that. They put in $500,000 park. They were paying for tree services. And then they were all excited about my ideas. I was like, well, man, let's, you know, I remember a big changing moment for me getting out of my shell. Because it's funny, until that time, people tell me I'm confident now. And I would have, if you had looked at me earlier,
and I need
timid.
How are you
I'm
connecting
timid.
With, are you knocking on their door? You mentioned like a census and a neighborhood and they're all in that. You're just going door to door.
I was just a door knocker, man. That's how I do all life. Even how I got into tailoring. I just started knocking on doors in Italy and trying to find textile people and started knocking on doors at dressmakers and tailors and be like, let's make something together. I don't know. That's just the only way I know how to work.
Okay. So, and they like your ideas and keep going. This is so riveting to me.
Oh, man. You know, the ideas vibed and there is this thing, so they're very anti-graffiti, right? I think it's like PBS or somebody put out like this documentary. And like, if you look at it, it's like got the shadowed guy with the voice, like talking bad and like everything about how he's a tagger. And like, it's like the worst, the epidemic of graffiti and the heart of it is South Omaha. And this led to like this legislation in Nebraska that was like a second offense of graffiti got you up to a year in prison and a felony. And I was like, holy buckets, man. I was just thinking of like the people I grew up with. Like literally, I remember like, that's harsh, man. They don't get it. We don't know what that's going to do yet, you know? And I was like, we got to do. So I was talking to them. I was like, we should do like this. Maybe we can do like this graffiti throwdown. Everybody's talking about it. And that turned into a really cool thing. And then when College World Series left and we were out of our big fundraiser, I was like, let's go out with the bang. Let's tear down a bunch of houses and build some new ones and get people to get into the neighborhood and learn about what civics are. There's this book I got, Let the People Decide. I didn't know what neighborhood associations was like. I was like, Reveille for Radicals. I just read Saul Alinsky. I was about ready to just like, yeah, take back the community. And I was young too, your 20s, right? And, you know, it just led into this path of just being excited. And I was very blessed to have a lot of great people that just taught me. I mean, I still don't think I know a lot. I'm just a person that has ideas, and I have a lot of terrible ideas, tons. I have more terrible ideas than I have good ones. In fact, I have a true story here. When I moved in town, they wanted a Latino business person to get on the business improvement district board that they made here in Fremont. And one of the guys who was like in charge of it at the time, they're like, oh, we should get Oscar. He does this community work and everything. They're like, oh, Oscar, this is a true story. He's like, no, he has ideas. He has ideas. And I was like, oh, and they told me that. They're like, what do you want to do? I was like, I'm good with that. I'm okay. I don't need to get on. I was like, if I'm going to go down as a guy that doesn't want to be on a board because I got ideas, I guess that's just what it is. So I guess that's where I just love Omaha, the region. This has been a community that I have grown with now. And my network is as much as value because I believe in social capital. You know, I read too much Robert Putman, I guess, and Bowling Alone through my school. And I found people like that. And so, like, my infrastructure is my people. And so even you, Sam, like, this is my circle. You're another garden region who's actually in a mega region, as I understand it by sociologists. And I'm intrigued now. You're the first real genuine connection I feel like I have down there. And who knows what happens, you know? And so that's a real fast forward version because we could stay on anything really long and I don't want to bore you. But all of that combines, right? So while I'm doing all this, I'm DJing in the background at nights. Like this is before the DJ scene's good. We're DJing at Nomad with friends and people are starting to put Omaha Fashion Week together. Now it's not called that, just like little fashion shows. And we're just partying all night, taking pictures. My friend's got a business called Photo Nelly. He's had babies now. He's got his own stump grinding business. I mean, like we're this culture, people that grew up. And then at the same time, as I'm doing community work, I'm growing up with these professionals too, who are a little older. And then it's just now it's just been bleeding it. And then as I'm looking at things, looking at all these neighborhoods, because I'm from small areas, I'm like, I'm going to start getting properties in these other areas because I have an idea. And maybe it's dumb. Maybe it's foolish. And this is where I told you, I'm not a real entrepreneur, man. I'm too artist or whatever about it. But like the idea is real. And even if it doesn't work out, it's going to work because I'm going to go for it. And it feels like something worthwhile going for.
That's what an entrepreneur is. Oscar, yeah. Mortgage company, and the guy's starting up neighborhoods now. And he did this presentation, and, you know, I said, hey, you know, I'm in this group. Can you present? We need a speaker. And he presented, and he couldn't have done it better. He said, I'm doing neighborhoods now because I wanted to and because I can. That's why he's popping up neighborhoods now. So I think to some end, it is as simple as an entrepreneur to have an idea and to be ignorant about it and to jump in head first. And I think the difference between a hustler and a liar or a con man is the hustler, the entrepreneur, figured it out and made it work. They had intention to, and they figured it out and they made it work. And maybe it broke, right? But nobody's upset because it's like they went back and they were like, look, there's very specific reasons why it didn't work, and here's why. Most people are going to be like, we thought it was crazy anyway. But the con man, the hustler, right, they just kind of like disappear. They're like, they never had intentions of making it work. Maybe they tried, but they gave it a half effort. Like, it just didn't work.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I've been interviewing a lot of people, Oscar, and I think that's an entrepreneur.
It's an entrepreneur, yeah.
So, okay.
Maybe when I grow up, when I grow up, I want to be an entrepreneur. Maybe.
Me too, Oscar. So, but I don't want to grow up either.
I don't either. No, I'm going to be a Toys R Us kid. Actually, honestly, I'm not even trying to overtalk about it. Like, I'm just so excited about what I'm finally writing and putting out. It's great. It's about just being imaginative again and playing and, you know.
So let's catch you up to that, because I'm recognizing, like, we'll have to be careful or the podcast will go on forever. I can already kind of tell.
No.
So let's kind of skip forward to you're writing a book now?
Yep. Finishing a book.
Beautiful. Yep. Beautiful. Yep. Beautiful. What's the book going to be about? How do we get it? When's it coming out?
I'm going to actually have a website that's going to go live at the end of the month. To put pre-orders. The book is called The Garden Regions of Tomorrow, Reviving Our Civic Imagination. It's basically I'm a social ethnographer and I've collected the notes and it's a collection of 12 white papers I have done, but I put them in a narrative format, and it's more of a narrative format meets the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius. It's a reflective practice, because at the core of what I'm saying here is, we're in a crisis mode for housing crisis all across the world, not even just the United States. And we're coming up with crisis programs and crisis mentalities, and it's not working. Any entrepreneur would tell you that. You can't think that way. You got to take a breath, calm down, and really grasp at what you're doing. And we're not that. And I think somewhere along the way, right, culturally, when a community used to come together and build a town, they'd build the town hall together. They'd build the churches together. Our civics, our idea of civics has changed. We've moved from understanding what it means to be a citizen, and I don't mean a U.S. citizen, a citizen who believes back in giving back to our people. And we've moved from that to being a consumer. We demand better services. We demand better programs. We demand more efficiency. And so right now, everything, and the noise is right now, and it's so right. It's so right. I'm not discounting anything. There are many creative people, but all the creativity is in silos, and mostly among economists. And mostly around specific politicians and or business people. And that's not bad. But what I'm saying is, in order to revive our civic imagination, we need to change the entire frame. And this is what I'm saying. We need to look at what I'm calling our garden region. My neighborhood is the edge of Dodge County in Nebraska to the edge of Pott County in Iowa. It spans four counties. And within it is a lot of clusters of people who, as an entrepreneur, if we looked at it this way, civic imaginative, we could make more money. We could run our schools better. And I have no doubt, but the reality is that we're not looking at it. You can write the perfect housing policy, the perfect loan product. I've seen it. Do you know what's going to mess it up every one of the times? A human being. One personality. We have a lack of emotional intelligence, but most importantly, we've lost our understanding that we can be imaginative. In this work, we don't have to do things the same way we always have. We don't have to be one job, right? And my book, I talk about like, hey, you don't tell your five-year-old they can't be a dinosaur when they grow up. You let them imagine what it's like to be a damn dinosaur. And that's our problem right now. We have that lack. And it's academically rigorous. I've taken it very seriously. It would hold up. Every white paper will hold up with the best of them. And I know, and I've tagged strategically a lot of international active current scholars, people who are housing advocates all over the world, because I'm excited to see their take. Because right now, everybody's panicking globally. And I'm like, hold on. We need to take a breath. And we need to collect ourselves. And we can't control the macro. But you know what we can control? This, Sam. Our garden region. Our little, small, micro communities. And we can do really creative, dope things. You know, I always like, I remember when I was learning about the history of even Nebraska, you know, they're one of the few banking systems that made it successfully out of the Great Depression. And it was so dope, the story why. You know, the banks came together right out of it. And they're like, they saw the Mardi Gras festivals and everything in Louisiana. They're like, let's go buy all the floats. And they got their money together, bought all that, came back and held the first World's Fair. And it became this big money thing and a big draw to the region, our region that we live in right now. From you to us. And we used to have that kind of imagination, that kind of ability to cooperate with each other. And so, again, it kind of goes into that. And that's where it's like, it bleeds right into the clothing. Like, I love the custom. It's not even just because it's custom. It's because it's actually taking the time to build something intentional that fits you. don't rush and buy something right off the rack. Don't rush and just grab a policy and pretend that it fits in every damn community. It's so much more complicated. As I remember one of my priests told me once, it doesn't need to be an Oscar de Rad production, but this does. It does. I think everything takes so much more intentionality and love. And if we do it, I just know. And so I'm so excited to share the book, whether people laugh at it or about it or not. I feel so confident that this is the last thing I do. And the gift to myself will be, I will feel in a good place that if it does ruin me on that side career-wise, I can just focus on clothes because I'm really pretty decent at that.
Well, but I think it would be well-timed because I notice a lot of what you're talking about. I mean, it's kind of what I grew up in, so I don't even know. But it's also, I'm of the generation where the transition happened, right? We knew our neighbors. We didn't have internet, and then we did have internet. And then so I guess I kind of saw the transition a little bit without realizing it. Well, business, it's going to sound weird, but business is what, I don't think it does this with everybody. But for me, it's what kind of woke me up to like, Kansas City is my home. This is where I'm going to plant a business. Like my wife's having a kid. We have a home here. Like, and it brought me out of this. And then I stopped watching the national news and, or the news in general for the most part. And anyway, okay. So it brought me into, I love the garden region because I kind of have mine, right? And I get to know the politicians, but it's also weird and or upsetting a little bit to me. And I can understand why, because there's plenty going on at the macro, right? There's plenty going on at the federal regulatory sort of, you know, people, I think some people kind of view me as ignorant because they're like, oh, you don't know what's happening up there. And I'm like, but I can't, there's not much I can do up there. I can show up at the polls, but if I'm being realistic, prior to the polls, if I spend 3 or 4 hours tops conservatively, I can get a brief snapshot on the candidates and what they've done and the decisions they've made, and I can walk into the polls informed, and then I can cast that vote. And that's probably more than many are doing. And that is a lot less obsessive and more methodical than following every single action along the way as if they're, some prima donna or Kardashian or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
But locally, I want to follow them around. I mean, the decisions they make are going to directly impact me. The decisions I make are going to directly impact them, whether they like it or not or realize it or not. That's the truth.
Yep.
And so it's kind of one of those things where it's like, but, you know, if I talk to my friends, they're like, you know, this is what Trump is doing. And I'm like, okay, cool. Do you know the name of the mayor in your city? No. Who's the mayor in my city? I was like, well, that guy has way more control directly over you, and yet you don't know who it is. How are you going to show up at the polls? And I'm going to be transparent to myself. I'm still kind of ignorant to, like, I could learn my garden region so much better. Needs more tending for sure.
I don't think any of us even think of it. And the whole idea is like, hey, in my region, right? Omaha's worried about Omaha. Fremont's worried about Fremont. Council Bluffs is worried about Council Bluffs. Walnut about Walnut. Macedonia about Macedonia. Blair about... And you guys, Kansas City, Missouri, right? They are the same. These state lines don't matter, right? And the way we compete for resources internally is just like... And I'm not saying it's all wrong. I'm just like... At some point, we need to take a step back, especially specifically the leaders, the people who are making these decisions. And my big premise is that we need to get them into a room together and have them play together, like literally, and use their imagination.
Yeah. A bunch of Legos.
That's actually the exact idea. I have a letter to Lego. They haven't responded. They probably think I'm nuts. That is exactly the idea. It's a long facilitated training program that we're doing because I've been part of all these community charrettes, regional plannings. And nothing about them, but it's like, that's one thing, right? They're talking about the policy. I'm talking about how we actually implement the stuff. Because when you get down to it, there's going to be a human being that's going to bury their feet in the ground and it's not going to move.
Yeah.
That's what happens all the time. So we need to like get that out in front. And that's what this is for. It's being real. I'm airing my dirty laundry across the region and with hyping up everybody I'm airing it in front of, being very grateful because I'm not saying that I'm just like, we're all part of the same thing. And yeah, I'm excited about it, I guess. And I'm very grateful for you helping me push to it, to come out of, not let my trauma define me, man. Yeah, trying.
Pleasure, man. So I feel like we're about ready to start to go into wrap up, and I wrap up typically with two questions. But before I do, is there anything we missed? You mentioned how to go and pre-order the book, correct? Did you give us the URL? You said there was one going live.
It's going to be gardenregions.com.
Gardenregions.com. Oh, such a beautiful name. I'm seeing a theme here. And it's going live at the end of this month.
It's
going
to go the live November. At the end of this month. I'll make sure you have a link of it. The link for it that will give a synopsis of the 12 papers, a little bit about what we're going to try to do. And then I'm moving some things in the background, just pushing hard to kind of bring it all together. Yeah.
I'm excited.
The only other thing I'd like to say is, I'm not as good at social media, so we're going to try to get better at it. And I'd be lying if I wasn't saying the thing that I think I'm the most excited about also for my family is our clothing and our professional atelier. And I think it's just telling everybody, hey, if there's anything we can design for you, I'm fast fashion. It's not just about money. Invest in yourself. I used to think it was that. It's not that. It's I can't tell you 100% of the people I've put in a bespoke fitted shirt, a pair of jeans, the glow they have, the pride they have in themselves. And I'm saying, yep, don't buy 10 pairs of jeans over the next 3 years, buy two, one a year, and that you feel great in, or get a nice jacket. You don't have to wear suits. Fine, get a nice sports coat or a nice, I'll make you a Letterman jacket. Those are the big things in one of my clients' regions right now. I'll make you a Letterman jacket if you want. But if you think of something, be like, you know what, you liked me on this and you want to reach out, we're all over it. My family and I, we'd love to help you. Love Bridal Sartorial is our thing. I'm specializing a lot, especially in women's wear, because there is a big gap for that in the region. And that's everything from dresses, blouses. I mean, I got you. It's so fun.
I remember, this is going to sound so silly probably to you, but I remember the first time winter was coming up and I spent, maybe $100, maybe a couple hundred. I don't know. I don't even think that. But I on a jacket, on a winter coat from JCPenney that I wanted. And to your point, exactly, it's since kind of worn down. But I was purposeful, right? I went out. I needed this thing. I picked what I wanted. And then the first time I put it on, and I felt special, That moment when you put it on and you feel special and you're like, yeah. And then you kind of have to do that again every now and again, too, because as time goes on, like several years later, you kind of have to do it again where you're like, you reinvent yourself again a little bit. And what better way almost to reinvent yourself than to start with clothing?
Oh, absolutely. Well, starting with yourself is the way to look at it. It's not even just the clothing. And so like, I would welcome you. I would love you to come down and we'd make you one piece. And I think it's a different thing, right? You feel it because it's also like, it's just, everything's traditionally made, especially if we do, I like doing what's called a based fitting. So like if you were to go in a Savile Row in London, right? Or in it's the best suiting district in the world, right? They do a based fitting or even a muslin fit sometimes. So it's a longer process. It's not like you're going to go into a store. You're not going to walk in and find, you've been here. You're going to have tons of suits, but you're going to find lots of fabrics and selections and see some sewing machines and stuff lying around, but that's more the experience. And so again, it's so cool. It's worth it, man. I wish I did a better job promoting it.
So as we move to wrap up, we have two questions we like to ask. So we have a motto over here, kind of our mantra, if you will. I think you'd mentioned a little bit about this earlier. Our ethos, if we have seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. Who's been a giant in your life, Oscar, that you'd like to pay homage to in this moment?
Amanda Brewer and my mother and my wife. I think those, I'm going to give three. Those are, Amanda Brewer is my first. She's the director of the CEO at Habitat Omaha. Incredible imagination, exceptional work ethic, believes, pushes. Yeah, everybody agrees with her, but she's still a fearless leader and committed to our region. I'm inspired by her. My mother just teaching me how to really give to your family. And then Katie just, how to chill and just not worry so much about everything and just love in the moment and forget that, honestly, the most important thing of everything is family and community. And my partner, she does the most exceptional job at that. So those are the three giants that they say behind any good man, there's always a greater woman. I've been blessed to have four, those three. And then I'll be biased and say Mother Mary is my fourth.
The second one is if there's a general rule of thumb or kind of pithy saying that you've found to be true again and again and again in your life, what would it be?
I'm going to drop a crazy one because my kids hate it and it's on purpose. I always like to tell them, you can't spell fun without functional. I love it. And they always get so mad because yes, you can. And so the goal is that you're always going to remember that you can't spell fun without functional. Even when you're going to have fun, be intentional, have fun, put it through, put intention to everything you do. So that's the one motto. I mean, I have a lot of them, but that's my favorite one because it throws people off. And I think it's really important. I think there's a good balance from it.
I like it. Can't spell fun without functional.
Sorry. It's probably a dumb one. I probably should have picked a million others.
No, it's the one that comes to mind that you use the most. So thank you. Yeah. Oscar, it's been such a pleasure having you on as a guest. I've really loved it. You're a fantastic human being. And so thank you for joining me today.
I'm so grateful, Sam. Thank you so much. I hope we stay in contact.
We will. Yes, yes. Yeah. Bye, everybody.
Peace, everyone. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.